welcome to the Research Culture Uncovered podcast, where in every episode we explore what is research culture and what should it be. You'll hear thoughts and opinions from a range of contributors to help you change research culture into what you want it to be.
Welcome. My name is Jed Hall, and I'm the Head of Research and Development at the University of Leeds. Now, as you know, all of the episodes I contribute to the Research Culture Uncovered podcast focus on some aspect of research impact, and they're all available via a playlist, which is in the show notes. You may have noticed I've also started a new playlist called Research Impact Heroes, which I'll be adding to periodically, and that link is also in the show notes. But today's episode doesn't fit into either of those categories, because today I'm joined by my mate, Dr. Jim Baxter, Academic Development Consultant here at the University of Leeds, who will soon be retiring at the end of July 2026. Hiya, Jim.
Hello.
So I've known Jim since early 2004. Can you believe that, Jim? 2004.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll get into some of that later.
Yeah, absolutely. So that I think we met not long after I got my first role as a researcher developer at the University of Nottingham. And you were also my manager when I first joined Leeds in 2011. Now, Jim and I were both undergraduates at Leeds. No, you were undergraduate at Bristol, weren't you? And I was undergraduate at Leeds. So you did MechEng, didn't you, at Bristol? And then you came to Leeds to do a PhD in the early 90s. Now, that's I think, when we actually overlapped as PhD students, although we never met at the time. Not knowingly met, which is interesting because I was collaborating with another group, you know, presumably not your research group, in MechEng during my PhD. So I was regularly over there in that big lab where all the engines were on the ground floor. Do you remember it?
Yes, I do. I spent most of my time on the top floor, on the fifth floor.
That's probably why we never met, because I probably couldn't wheeze my way all the way up to the top floor, and there probably wasn't a reason either, because of going to the lab on the ground floor. It was sensible that you don't try and get an engine on the top floor, of a building. Anyway, so we unfortunately never met then. After I left in 1993, you stayed on at Leeds and did a postdoc before becoming a lecturer in 1998. So I'm just reminding Jim, because he's kind of like, do I remember any of this? And then you moved into researcher and academic development roles at Leeds in 2002. And this all comes from your LinkedIn profile. So if you've got that wrong, I've got that wrong. Where he's been involved in loads of work around postgraduate researchers, postdoctoral researchers, new lecturer development, and also research leadership. So he's covered the whole spectrum of career stages associated with research. Now, Jim has also sat on Senate, which is the university's academic governance body, which is chaired by the Vice Chancellor, for many years. How long were you on Senate, Jim?
I'd have to go and work it out, but I'd somewhere in the order of 10 years as an elected member.
So because of that, as sitting on that very high profile committee, and his 32 years of working at Leeds, not counting his PhD, that's just counting his postdoctoral research lectureship and his roles in research and development, our team refer to him as the university's keystone, and he's really certainly the university's memory. In fact, this morning I got in touch with him because I thought there was a document I remember reading. Jim will know where that is. And sure enough, he did. And I really don't know how we'll cope. That's just a really simple example of the way Jim has that institutional memory, both at those kind of minor levels in terms of where documents are, and also at that really strategic level in terms of where the university's going, what the sector is all about, how should the university respond, what has it tried in the past and got wrong, what has it tried in the past and got right and has forgotten how to do. Jim knows all of that stuff at Leeds because of his many years here. So, Jim, how's it feel? How's it feel kind of looking back on that time?
It's strange. I tell you what's occurred to me when you were doing the introduction. And I mentioned being on the fifth floor in mechanical engineering. When I started in mechanical engineering on the fifth floor, there were 50 full size drawing boards up there. So people may know what I mean by double elephant paper, huge sheets of paper, sort of like a meter wide sheet of paper. And these drawing boards were bigger than those sheets of paper. So I very much came into the HE sector at a point in time where it was still very much an analog world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that about 1994 is, I think, the date that's given to when the World Wide Web was created. And that was the same year I finished my PhD. So I think what looking back I see is that change, that move from the rotary dial telephone to where we are now with smartphones, as an example, that that fifth floor of mechanical engineering, won't be a drawing board in sight anymore, I suspect. It'll be all driven by computers.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It is amazing how the world has changed since we were doing our research and sticking in floppy disks to get computers to boot and things like that. You know, it's astonishing. I remember for my experiment using this dodgy old Atari to control Atari computer to control the laser. Awful. So let's get into reminiscing a bit more strategically. Yep. That actually might be useful for listeners to this podcast. So, as I've said, you've been in research and development at Leeds since 2002, and you've always been passionate about it. So can you tell us why you moved into that, and, you know, what were the reasons you've stayed at Leeds?
So I think the key thing in amongst all of this for me is I like working with people. I like helping them develop. I like to see sort of like those light bulb moments, the people enthused about what they can go and do next. And I also like designing things, making things. So the mechanical engineering background is very much that the focus there is physical. But I think the reason and what my PhD was to a degree about was the process of designing things. So it's the process of designing things, the process of developing our provision in organizational development, professional learning, be it workshops, be it programs, be it resources, is trying to be creative about it, and trying to take that design approach where actually starting with what do the people we work with need. How do we come up with a set of requirements for that, and then how do we deliver on those requirements? So for me, it's why am I passionate about it? It's about trying to deliver the needs against the needs of people, building on requirements, drawing upon those principles of design. I think is what interested me in my PhD, what I was doing in mechanical engineering, and the role that I took on in what is now organizational development and professional learning. Before the role that I took on was advertised, I didn't know it existed. I think 24 years later, here we are talking about it. I haven't left it behind. When I was looking at the role, I thought, actually, hang about, my experience is a really good fit with this. My interests are a really good fit with this. Let 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 there's a real opportunity here to continue to work with people in new and different ways, and to utilize the experience I've got. So I made an application and was fortunate enough to be appointed. What keeps me going? What has kept me in it for the last couple of decades? I think that there's always been something new and interesting. There's variety of what I've been involved with. I've seen things over time. I've got involved in projects around the university, looking at developing new buildings and how those are used. I've been involved with building big development programs for staff, doing some of the needs analysis I talked about, talking to academics across the institution, researchers across the institution about what they need, and that's always fascinating. So variety of interesting things to do. I have to say this, don't I? No, I don't. I think that I enjoy working with people in the team. So the people around me that I work with, I find that a pleasure. I was in the office yesterday morning, and we were having a conversation that actually helped me think about how I put arguments forward in other contexts. Mm. And I wouldn't get that if I wasn't working with like-minded people. And those are people that are actually relatively new to the team as well.
Yeah.
Certainly new to the team from my perspective. So I enjoy working with people. And I think the third thing is that the place of work fits with what I do outside work, fits with my family life.
Yeah.
And so there's there's a happy marriage. I enjoy the role. I enjoy working with the people, and it fits well with my home life. There's never been another opportunity that has been as exciting.
That's fantastic. It's really great to hear that, because I know kind of in 2002 it actually wasn't far into the start of actually there being a staff development unit at the university. That's right, isn't it?
Ish. So my first encounter with what is now organisational development professional learning was when I was an academic in mechanical engineering undertaking the postgraduate certificate of learning and teaching in higher education. So this I did that before the millennium.
Yeah.
But I reckon when I joined the department, there were originally four people who created the department. And then when I joined, there were less than 10.
Mm.
And I think me and two other colleagues who joined actually tipped the size of the team over beyond 10. Take that as an order of magnitude rather than the precise number.
I won't hold you to the figure. So that at the time probably gave you a lot of scope for kind of experimentation and trying things and you know, building new things. You mentioned that a lot.
Yep.
So over your career, what kind of projects and activities have you enjoyed the most? What have you got the biggest satisfaction from, and where does that satisfaction come from? You know, why was that so satisfying?
Okay, so I'm going to start with a big thing. I think that one of the things that I was most satisfied with, I'm not sure I can claim all the, I can't claim all the credit for it. I can claim a little bit of influence, hopefully in making it happen. And that was when, this is the time when the university had a strategy map, and there was a refresh of that strategy map. And for the at that refresh point, there was an explicit reference to researchers, the people on the strategy map that hadn't been there before. And I think that was a key tipping point for me. There was that recognition that we do research not just for the outputs and for the new knowledge it creates, but also because we're trying to help the next generation of people do the research in the future. Yeah. So I thought that was possibly the thing that gave me the greatest satisfaction. And I think that was a lot about making sure that we were influencing what was going on in the institution. At the crude level, it's about writing papers for committees that actually exemplify the importance of the people as well as the people in delivering the research. So that I took a great deal of satisfaction from that. I think one of the things that has given me continues to give me a lot of satisfaction is being able to encourage people to think about their research work within the higher education context. Higher education isn't just about doing research, it's about doing student education. And there are lots of other things that take place. So I've already mentioned the postgraduate certificate of learning and teaching in higher education. That has gone through a number of iterations over the year with a number of different people leading it. And there was one of the developments that was probably earlier on in my time in the department was to develop an award that was built around not only student education, but research and leadership and building in elements of all of those skills, competencies into the program, which enables us to do things like there was an optional module included on research supervision, which is possibly the one that the most clear link across the student education research agendas. That was really satisfying. And that even now the current postgraduate certificate in academic practice includes a session on the higher education context. And to a degree, that's because of what the accreditation body requires us to do. But it does give us an opportunity to actually talk to people when they're thinking about their student education practice, think about how do you do that within the context, the broader context of what goes on in the university, including research. So and trying to encourage people involved in student education to think about student projects. Finally, your projects are a great way of marrying the two together. It's a great way for academics to maybe get some work done into an area that's of interest to them that they haven't experienced before, and they want some pilot studies to take place. Taking a real satisfaction from keeping that connection alive. We'll maybe return to that later. What else do I get satisfaction from? One of the workshops we run is for PGRs preparing for their viva, the workshop called Your Viva. And the thing that I enjoy about that was, one, I think my memory fails me a little bit, but I'm pretty confident that when we first did it, I was involved in developing it, and we're still running it in a different form now. And I think there are two things that I was really pleased about. One was that we focus very much on what the PGRs, the experience they go through in the viva, rather than telling them what we want to do. We give them the opportunity to experience what it might be like to be in the viva. So there's trying to align it very much with what their needs are. And you can see when they leave, they go away with a clearer sense of purpose.
Yes.
When they depart the workshop. So those, and that's just one example of a number of things that I've been engaged with over time, where you can see people go, oh yes, I'm going to do something about that. I think one of the ways to characterize it is micro moments, seeing the realization on people's faces. Oh, that's what you mean. Oh, that's what I need to do. So it's about lots of small wins. That the principle of marginal gains. So that's been really satisfying. I'll mention this example because I think there's a particular point I wanted to get across here. So in our one of our libraries on the top floor, we've got some training rooms that are meeting rooms that are used by the library. We use for PGRs, and the whole top floor is aimed at use by postgraduates, both top postgraduates and postgraduate researchers. So it gives them a space, and those meeting rooms, there's a divider between the two of them. And I was involved in the project that was thinking about how the rooms were going to be used, how they're going to be designed. And that divider is a whiteboard. So the whole wall is a whiteboard. And that was one of the key suggestions that I made when that room was redesigned. And it's really, I've seen at least two colleagues go in there and get really excited about the opportunity to map out the whole workshop as they go along, note the workshop as they go along on that whiteboard, and people take pictures of it, and it's something they can go away with. And I've even been in there and seen equations that somebody's done some sort of proof or solution. It's gone across the entire thing, and that if that's only possible because of the extent of the whiteboard. And I recognize it's a physical thing, but it's also a pedagogic thing. So why do I mention it? Because it's a physical thing. There's some clear evidence of impact, and we'll come back to the challenges we face around that when it comes to staff development later. But it was, the key thing for me was we were involved as the people developers early enough in the project to actually be able to influence that happening. And I think for me, one of the key things that I think I've learned over time is, maybe I'm trailing some of the stuff I'll say later, is it'd be great if we could get involved in change projects earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you mentioned that linking of the different purposes of universities.
Yes.
and that linking goes through the people, and I know you're really passionate about making sure that those different demands, because they can sometimes feel competing,
yep,
are resolved for yep, those people that they, yep, that they merge within, and yep, and hopefully to prevent that sort of burnout from those, yeah, different demands on them. I know that that drives you a lot, and it's something I've noticed throughout the time that I've known you, that you know, you don't focus on, it's just the research that I care about, and not the teaching side of the university. Now kind of slightly different angle, you know, in every career there are things that didn't go so well, or didn't emerge as you'd hoped for. So kind of looking back over that career, what change in culture in higher education, or the, you know, the practices that kind of are the physical embodiment of the culture, did you hope to see but still haven't been realized?
So I think the first practice that I think hasn't been realized, I think maybe saying it hasn't been realized, is there hasn't been as much progress as I would have liked to have seen, is maybe a better way of characterizing, is that it's us being able to make people better, more aware of the situation they find themselves in. What do I mean? So I remember running introduction meetings for new research staff, new postdocs. And the conversation would go something along the lines of, how many of you would have got an aspiration to have an academic post? And you get 9 out of 10 people put their hands up to that question. And then, but if you look at the data of the number of academic posts available versus the number of postdocs that will be looking for them, it's the other way around. It's more like 1 in 10.
Mm.
And there's a lack of an appreciation of the circumstance the postdocs find themselves in. It's, yes, absolutely, go for the academic career if that's what you're interested in, where your passion lies. At the same time, also think about what your other alternatives are. So I think that level of awareness, and another level of awareness of circumstance, is there's a real push for people to get research funding. and that it's kind of there's a hurdle there. There's a for a milestone for people new to it, getting that first grant or getting the first grant of any size. And typical that first grant of any size will result in you employing some staff. And the thing that this is a simplification. I recognise it's a simplification, but it's at the point you start writing the grant, you are in effect committing to recruiting and managing people. And actually, the focus that I perceive people have is when they're trying to get their first grant is I need to come up with a great research idea that will attract funding. They don't necessarily recognize that commitment to that the people are going to be involved in the grant. And there's also a whole list of other things that they will need to do that are around project management and administration that they need to, they're committing their time to, which they don't necessarily recognize. So awareness of what you, so postdocs awareness of what they're committing themselves to when they take on a role and where that means for their career. Academic staff recognizing what they're taking on when they're getting some research funding and what that means for their careers. So I think there's I think we need to, I'm not sure we do a good enough job yet of helping people recognize that that's what they're getting themselves into. The second thing, you'll like this one. I don't think we are as good as we should be when it comes to evaluating what we do. And there's, from memory, you've got a whole podcast with Tony Bromley, who developed the Rugby Team Impact Framework and thinking about how do we measure and evaluate development of researchers. I think that, but at the same time, recognizing it's really difficult to show cause and effect when it comes to we have some sort of intervention, but what behavior change that results in further down the line is really difficult to identify, not least of which is because there are a number of other influences along the way for people in terms of how they change. But I think that, so if I've got another frustration, that's it. I think we do a reasonable job, but I think we could do more.
Yeah.
And then I think the other thing that frustrates me is the speed of change, the ability of well, I've seen it from a Leeds perspective, but I suspect it's not dissimilar across other large organizations, is that it becomes really difficult to change the organization, and it takes time, and it that can be frustrating, but that to a degree that's the nature of the beast. And until it becomes imperative to actually increase that rate of change of speed, then I think we will continue as we are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's, you know, it's interesting, that one, isn't it? Because there are moments in time where that external imperative causes change to speed up. Now, if you've not been used to managing change at that speed, when you get to the high pressure moments when you are having to do it at speed, you get it drastically wrong usually.
Yes.
And I think, you know, that is my concern, certainly my concern at the moment in higher education in the UK, because of that large imperative to change, because of the much tighter financial situation at the moment. And I think, you know, I don't know whether colleagues around the world who are listening to this might also be feeling something similar in their countries. I know somebody I interviewed last week in Canada said exactly the same thing in terms of the money has just disappeared for higher education.
Yeah, I think there's a going back to the awareness point, I think there's a role for all of us to understand how we add value to the organization.
Yeah.
Is that being honest about how the finances work and how we fit within that, and that doesn't feel necessarily comfortable with me, because that's not necessarily how I viewed the purpose of higher education 30 years ago. I think it's a different environment now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, loads of things you can point out that are essentially my own impact case study, you know, to come into a research impact language. You know, narrative CVs are a researcher's essentially impact case study. What have I driven in these different areas of being a researcher? What value have I created?
Yeah, absolutely.
So thinking about kind of those successes and things that you found frustrating over those years, what advice have you got for us who are still working in the sector? You know, maybe at Leeds or more broadly, internationally, nationally, you know, what advice would you give us all to kind of reflect on to maybe help us to navigate the next few years?
I think, so at a really big level, develop your network. And maybe more simplistically, get to know the people around you. Get to know the people that engage in the provision, come on the workshops, commission the workshops, a setting university strategy. Talk to the research about what they want and need. I think is a really key starting point. I think that the thing that that has re-emphasized, right, okay, so let me jump sideways at the moment for a moment. Same principles apply in student education. There's a whole push at Leeds for student-centered active learning, and it's really about making the students the focus of the student education experience, not the person standing at the front delivering the knowledge. And I think we need to, from a research perspective, adopt similar principles. And I think the result of me having spent some time formally and informally going and interviewing and talking to people about research and development is that everybody's different. That we talk about sheep dipping people. So what the reason providing one development program for everybody that meets all their needs is a forlorn hope. It just doesn't happen. I think you and I have encountered this when it comes to the research impact agenda. You can have a really senior academic who's never had to or never engaged with the impact agenda particularly. Therefore, they've got really experienced researcher, but need to learn about the impact agenda. You can get postdocs who are involved in setting up spin-out companies, who are actually actively engaged in the impact agenda from the get-go, but they don't have the research experience. So people come with very different experiences. I've talked to people who've come to the institution from large commercial organisations who've been through leadership programmes, so are used to leading and managing people. And then we've got senior academics who can suddenly find themselves in a position where they're leading and managing people and never had to really engage with that before. So I think that what's the point that I'm coming to here is actually creating an offering provision that allows people to tailor it to meet their own needs, and that people are able to treat themselves as whole academics.
Mm.
And being able to get the balance right, I think allied with that, there's something about being compassionately honest with people. I go back to the point I made earlier about people being aware of what they're getting themselves into, and I think we need to be compassionately honest with people. I think is the way that I would express that. I think part of that is that being honest with people is getting to think about their careers earlier.
Mm.
So not only how's your research developing, but how's this developing you in your career? What are your interests, your passions, your values? How do you make sure that whatever career you take on aligns with what interests you and motivates you? It's a lot easier to do a job where you're motivated and interested in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something about being honest with people, something around this is a notion of a researcher. So student education talks about the hidden curriculum. So somebody new coming into universities who doesn't come from a background where people have done a university degree, actually understanding what a lecture is, what a seminar is, what a tutorial is, what office hours are. If you've never encountered those before, which some children at school never do, what does that mean when somebody says, well, my office hours are? So how am I supposed to engage with that? And I think the same is true in a research context is we talk about full economic costing of research grants. What does that mean? How somebody applying for a grant for the first time, what does that mean? So there's something about understanding how the administration system works such that you can engage with that. I think there's something about how peer review works and how you engage with that. The decisions, how decisions in the institution work when it comes to which people do we put support funding behind, which people don't we put funding behind. So trying to help people navigate that, the water that's not always that clear.
Yeah, yeah, that's a lovely way of describing it. In fact, the way you phrase that is very much taking care of people, isn't it? And providing a process and a set of practices and services that are all about taking care.
Yeah. Okay. And I think part of that comes back. So one of the frustrations I talked about was the evaluating what we do. And I think that part of that taking care, if we thought more about how we were going to evaluate what we do, it would enable us to be clearer at the beginning about what we were trying to do. We'd be able to measure it, and that would help people see both. Okay, so if I engage with this, that's what I benefit from it. Oh, and actually, there's evidence of this is what has happened as a result of doing that. I mean, you don't need me to tell you this. There's a whole that in essence, I've just summarized you, taken a view on your whole impact work.
So yes, now,
Dr. Heal thyself.
Yeah, absolutely. So now that we've kind of looked at the frustrating bits, you know, the speed of change and things like that. Looking back, what are you most, I guess, pleased about in the way that the sector has changed since you joined it? Either, you know, it maybe all the way back to when you were an undergraduate.
So the thing I remember as a PGR was going on a graduate school.
Just describe that.
Oh,
just
in, graduate just school. In case. So my memory of it was there must have been, I don't know, could have been as many as 50 of us more who went and spent a week at a university. We lived in a student accommodation. We were catered. And we were taken through a number of exercises that were designed to help us think about how we worked, not as individuals, but as a collaborative whole. I think the notion is very much you as a PGR have spent 3+ years focusing on one very small, very focused topic in a huge amount of depth. And the world of work we were going to be going into was we were going to be working in teams, in groups, with larger organizations. So there's a series of exercises we went through to help us think about how we worked in teams, how do the teams work with each other. My memory of it was a week. It might not have been that long. But it was the only time as a researcher where I felt that there was an opportunity to engage with and think about what I did in the workplace, in the research space, outside of my research team. There wasn't any university induction around research. There wasn't any. In fact, this may actually relate to when the department originally was set up. It might have been when I was a PGR, because there was towards the end of being a PGR, I seem to recall we were encouraged to engage in workshops around how we taught as PGRs. So I used to demonstrate in practical classes. So there was a reasonably progressive head of school at the time who thought actually there's an opportunity here, and that must have, although I probably didn't, I'm only now making the connection.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's how I started out as a PGR. I think that how have things changed? So research culture, I think, is the thing that I've seen develop over time, and not necessarily research culture as we talk about it today, but research culture over the period of time. So the first change is actually that one of when I moved from my role in mechanical engineering into the department, I took on a role of supporting people develop around research and knowledge transfer. And now knowledge transfer at the time was the label that probably has become research impact. So it was the first time that somebody had a role where we were actually starting to think about not only research, but the research impact we were having. When I joined the department, we were the hosts of the VTI Yorkshire and Humberside hub. And at the heart of that was providing workshops for PGRs. So I'd started in 1990, and there was nothing for me as a PGR. In 2002, so around the millennium, there had started to be provision for PGRs to help them develop. So I think that culture, that switch from research outputs to thinking about not only outputs but impact, not only outputs but the people. There was the Roberts funding that came along that was a huge investment in the transferable skills training of researchers, both PGRs and postdocs. That came in, and I think that created improved the capability. So I think it did two things. One, it raised the profile of researcher development, and I think it improved the capability, certainly at Leeds, to enable us to deliver it. You will have some views on this, because this is probably about the point in time when you got involved at Nottingham, I guess.
Yes, that's right.
And so there was research impact, the Roberts funding. Okay, so yesterday at the University of Leeds, there was an event for technicians around research. So you can see that things have developed to actually recognise that it's not just about PGRs and researchers, but the broader community that delivers the research is important. So I think that there's a cultural change there. There are other cultural changes around. You and I have delivered workshops on responsible research innovation. So are we doing the right sorts of research in the right way? Before that, there was a focus on research ethics. Are we actually thinking not only about the research we're doing, but are we what the impact on that has on society more broadly? Doing research for the right reasons.
Yeah.
I think is what that's about. I think we need to recognise, having said all of that change is, I think, really, really valuable. There is a potentially an increased burden on the people leading the research, that it's not just about doing the research anymore. You need to take into account a number of other factors. And I think it's difficult to get past the bureaucracy at times if you're on the ground in it. But the real value in amongst doing it all of this is that it should improve the quality of the research that's done for the benefit of all.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's been amazing changes, as you said. For when we were doing our PhDs at Leeds, the only training I went on was, can I use the fire extinguisher? Other than my experience of going on a graduate school, or as they were called, grad schools, mine was 5 days at the University of Sheffield, and they've since knocked down that hall of residence. Interestingly, but yeah, amazing changes, and thankfully now we are recognizing other people involved in the research activity, not just those doing the primary tasks of gathering data, analyzing it, all of those things. But you know, thankfully I was actually in a research group where the technicians that produced the kit and helped us to run it often were on the named authors on the paper. And that was when I was, you know, when I was a PhD student. And I kind of, when I kind of suddenly realized that not other people, lots of other places weren't doing that, you know, when the credit taxonomy was coming in, I was like, but some places did actually recognize that so many other people were contributing, you know, writing the code. You know, now we have that focus on research software engineers.
Yeah, so, I don't. Certainly my experience as a PGR as an academic was that we wouldn't have been able to do a lot of the research we did.
Absolutely.
As individuals. It was the collective whole that was really, really valuable and important.
So, Jim, we've taken a good look back. We're recording this in more or less the middle of June. You're, as I said at the beginning, you'll be retiring at the end of next month. So what are your plans for that retirement now that research leadership and organizational development are kind of disappearing into the mist? And also, yeah, so what's going to take up your time other than that and being the amazing colleague you've been?
So I'd like to rest a little bit. I'd like to take a breath. That just may be an age thing. I want to keep making things. So the current thing I've got in my sights is doing some pottery. I think one of the things that I've learned during my career that's relevant here is that I need to be I need to understand what I wanted to get out of it and be focused. So don't try and do everything all at once. I need to pick something to make, which I'm thinking about at the moment. In discussion with my wife, I think we identified that we hadn't been to the theatre for ages. Wouldn't it be nice if we started going to the theatre? I know you enjoy your cricket. Can I actually find the time to go and attend some sporting events? I think would be something that would be nice to do. The idea of actually going to Headingley and sitting and watching a county game in the sun with a picnic actually is quite appealing. I'd like to spend more time with my parents, with family more broadly, which hopefully will be an opportunity. Although, if I reflect back on my parents' experience of retirement, they were probably busier when they retired than when they were working. And then I think that I need to work out how to do this. I'll be really interested to see how the work of the team moves on. I mean, the one of the things that I haven't mentioned as we've spoken is the research leadership package that I developed, and that was very much came out of thinking about what do people need. They all want something different, so actually let's give them something they can tailor for themselves. So what I'm interested in is how what I hopefully have helped influence and create a space to develop over the last 20 plus years is to see how that develops and grows in the future.
Well, I'm sure we can help out with that in terms of maybe doing, you know, pick up a podcast episode on it, and you know, you will always be able to pop into the office and kind of come and say hello. And yeah, absolutely. Let's you know, I love watching my county championship cricket game. So hopefully at some point Yorkshire and Lancashire will actually be in the same division where we can, you know, I can come and be the visitor at Headingley with you, and you can come and be the visitor at Old Trafford with me. And we can see what each other's pavilion is like. Because I quite like the Old Trafford one, but I've never been in the Headingley one.
The Western Terrace is an experience.
Isn't it just, yes, used to go quite regularly as a PhD student to the Western Terrace. So hopefully we'll be able to meet up and watch a bit of cricket. So Jim, thank you for the chat today. Thank you for being an amazing colleague over the many years since 2004 and since I joined Leeds in 2011. And I'll leave you to say goodbye to the listeners.
Jed, thank you very much for talking to me, and thank you to those who are listening.
Thanks for listening to the Research Culture Uncovered podcast. Please subscribe so you never miss out on our brand new episodes. And if you're enjoying the discussions, give us some love by dropping a 5-star rating and written review, as it helps other research culturists find us. And please share with a friend and show them how to subscribe. Thanks for listening, and here's to you and your research culture.